Hey there, this is Nick Westergaard. I don't know about you, but I am a fellow marketing book addict. So that's why I can't get enough of the Marketing Book Podcast. So much so, I had to go and write a marketing book so that I could have the honor, the distinction, the privilege of being on the podcast. My new book is called Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, which was named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer in 2016. My goal for this podcast is to help you discover new ideas about what's working in modern marketing. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything discussed in the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. Today, we're joined by Nick Westergaard, and we're going to talk about his new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Nick Westergaard is a marketing strategist, speaker, author, and educator. As chief brand strategist at Brand Driven Digital, he helps build better brands at organizations of all sizes, from small businesses to Fortune 500 companies. Nick writes for Marketing Profs, and his thoughts have been featured in U.S. News & World Report, Entrepreneur Magazine, Mashable, American Express Open Forum, and others. He also teaches branding and marketing at the University of Iowa and hosts the popular On Brand podcast. Nick lives with his wife and five children in Coralville, Iowa. And today, as we record this, it's Nick Westergaard's birthday. Nick, congratulations on Get Scrappy and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you. I've always wanted for my birthday to both be on a podcast and to have written a marketing book. And today has brought all of that to life.
It's all coming together for you.
It's just going to be downhill from here. This is the peak.
Yes. Thank you. And I should add, we've got even more birthday karma going on here, Nick, because today is your birthday, and then your big social brand forum this September, the closing day of it, is my birthday. So it's crazy, man. I'm telling you.
We are brothers in birthday connectivity this year.
Yes, and I looked at the keynoters for your social brand forum, and it includes Jay Baer, Joe Polizzi, Jenny Dietrich, and I am really honored to say all of them have been on the Marketing Book Podcast too. So it's just today's karma day, I think.
I think so. Yeah, that's. I was going to say there's a few marketing books between that lot as well.
Oh yeah, fantastic ones. So Nick, your book Get Scrappy, loved it. But you know, in the movie Jerry Maguire, you know, you had me at hello. You know that line.
Yes.
You had me at the beginning when you referenced Saturday Night Live skits with Stuart Smalley, and really with Seth and Amy. I mean, at that point, I knew this was going to be good.
Well, that's awesome to hear. You know, it's those little kind of nuggets of personality that it is, you know, not to get too far off into the tall grass of book writing, but that is sometimes this stuff that feels like those are those weird little jags. And it's like you were talking about being diagnosed with a humor disorder earlier before we hit record. And
it's called an overactive sense of humor. It's a clinical term.
Exactly. And I confess to being on the spectrum also. And because of that, you know, we've probably both been out there and not always had our jokes and our references land. And so when you're committing all of this stuff, I was going to say to paper, but to pixels, I guess, and you go through and you're editing, you kind of stop and wonder about some of those things and think, was that really, really enough of a thing? Do people, I didn't even know what to call that or kind of even how to reference it, but but then ultimately, you know, when you look and you read a lot of marketing books, as we both do, you know, the advice is great. But I think one of the biggest things, one of the hardest things to identify and then preserve and protect in a book is personality too. So I'm glad I'm glad that was still present for you.
Well, you do have to be careful because not everyone gets your jokes. Trust me, I know that. And I can remember once not too long ago, I was calling into tech support for some software company, and you know, I was a little frustrated. I just didn't quite. They said, "So what's the problem?" And I said, "I've fallen and I can't get up." And there was no laughter in this young professional tech support person, you know, no laughter. So I said, do you know that joke? And he said, "No, I don't know that, but my dad says it all the time."
Yeah, you know, that reminds me of where I was continually reminded of both my age and some of the shortcomings of the sense of humor. Another marketing book author would be Ann Handley, who wrote the foreword to Get Scrappy. And I also teach at the University of Iowa, and I have her Skype in as a guest.
Oh, wow.
And
I hope the students appreciated that.
I think they did, but they weren't always the most engaging group. And, you know, we were wanted to get them to ask her some questions. So I finally thought, you know, I'm just going to work the room a bit here. And I said, I'll just walk the room with the mic in hand, like Donahue.
Mm-hmm. Like Donahue.
Donahue. Yeah. Yeah. Crickets. Cause you know, then I quickly did some math and I realized that Donahue was off the air, years and years before they were born. So
That's right. Well, you mentioned that you read a lot of marketing books, and I noticed on page 9, you said, "My name is Nick and I'm a book addict." And Nick, I just want you to know that this is a safe space for you. You're home. Okay.
Not thank you.
With all the listeners, we're all book addicts. We all love marketing and sales books. So Nick, tell us the story about how this book came to be and why you wrote it and who you had in mind when you were writing it.
Absolutely. Well, it's a funny story because it was about 3 or 4 years ago at Marketing Profs B2B conference, and I was putting together a talk, and it was one of those situations where I didn't know exactly. I knew I wanted to do a new talk on social media, and based on what I was consulting, teaching about, and I had this idea of how to get scrappy with social media. And saying I had an idea sounds like there was more there than at the very beginning. There was. So it was one of those where concepts where I liked the talk title. And then as I sat down to write it, I thought, okay, so what does this really mean? And that's where I developed some of those common themes that are still very much alive in the book about getting smart, starting with strategy, about how you can do more with less, and then ultimately how you can simplify your marketing for the long haul. Mm-hmm. Those are the three parts of the talk, and they're the three parts of the book as well. And you talked about who it's for, and that's really interesting because you know, I first encountered you on our mutual friend Drew McClellan's agency podcast.
A fellow Iowan.
Both of us. You now know both of us.
I know
both
two people
the marketers
in Iowa. Yes.
In Iowa. And you were talking about having a vertically focused segment of your business, and that's something that I would say I'm. That's my other disorder beyond humor, is I have trouble focusing. Because I like working with small businesses, entrepreneurs, and also Fortune 500 companies. So I have this kind of diverse perspective. And in that, I saw that many, both small businesses and marketing teams at this point in marketing, are struggling with a lot of the same challenges.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite quotes that I reference early on in the book is from Samantha Hersel at Schwinn, which I think many of us might think of as, you know, I wrote a Schwinn growing up. My father wrote a Schwinn growing up. My kids write a Schwinn. You know, it's kind of this venerable brand that is still around. And I think it's easy to think that they must be enormous and have all of these marketing resources. And I've been there. I've talked with their team, and it's a small, scrappy team. And when I was explaining this concept to Samantha, she said something in agreement that I put into the book because I loved the definition so much. Because she said, I think we could all use a few people and a few dollars more. You know, nobody, especially in marketing, has all of the resources that they need. So that's who this book is for.
Mm-hmm. So let's define scrappy. And what is the scrappy mindset?
Scrappy has a lot of different definitions out there. And the one that I plugged into the book, Getting Scrappy with Definitions, which is kind of meta, is one from the Urban Dictionary that talks about someone that is outmatched in, you know, by every measure, resources, but more than makes up for it with willingness, spirit, with will, spirit, and heart. And I like that concept because I do think that if you do get smart, you can find ways to do more with less and simplify. And I think that where we're at in marketing, that is an effective way to reboot how we think about our marketing. Because as we look at some of the common obstacles that we face as digital channels emerge, and we struggle with, I talk about shiny new things in the book, it's easy to think, I've got to do all of these things. I've got to check these off the list. I got to get all of those new social icons on our website so that I can, you know, get that dopamine hit and feel good that I'm doing marketing right. Mm-hmm. But as I say a few different times in the book, I don't think more is always better. Sometimes more is just more, whether that is creating tons and tons of content that nobody's ever going to see, or having a presence on every social network. You're going to end up chasing your tail. And that's why I think it's better to focus on why you're doing what you're doing, which is kind of where we start off in the book too.
Yeah, and you talk about this brains before budget idea, and it seemed like if every marketer, whether it's GM or the local deli, some it's going to be easier for others, but if you just pretend you don't have any money to begin with, that really seems to get you thinking. I mean, just even think for a few, you know, the smaller businesses will say, well, we don't have much to begin with. Okay, good. Then there's less of a stretch for them. But for the others, if just think like you don't have a budget at all, and how does that changes things? And also, you talk about mousetrap marketing as it relates to the scrappy mindset. Explain what mousetrap marketing is.
Well, as I was defining scrappy early on in that talk, it made me think of the mousetrap, and you know the old saying that nobody's build a better mousetrap and they'll blaze a path to your door. But you know, 100+ years have gone by since that first little wooden wire trap was first patented, and you know it's but nothing else has caught on because it does the trick. It's kind of back to that. That point, like you're saying, of imagining you don't have a budget. I mean, the mousetrap is kind of a perfect representation of that. Could there be something slicker, you know, that was made out of fine materials and had some sort of complex sensor to detect the mouse? And it's like, but really just this thing and a little dab of peanut butter, it does the trick.
Yeah, so, and it brings up the issue of effectiveness. Yeah, you could have a one on a gold bar, but is that effective?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, some sort of, you know, laser that, you know, zaps the mouse and then, you know, disposes of it. It's just there's...
Well, the defense industry probably has something like that.
I was going to say, I wouldn't want to see the DARPA mouse trap.
Right.
But yeah, so I mean, that's why I kind of like that approach to our marketing because it is efficient and effective, which is kind of my definition of mousetrap marketing because it doesn't accomplish the task any less.
Yeah.
It gets the job done. And I also think that it's an important balance to strike because it's interesting, and we can talk more about kind of selling the scrappy concept to publishers because it was tricky because there was, many that wanted to say, oh, it's just marketing for small businesses. But exactly like you said, I think it is beneficial to everyone, even in larger organizations, to think like you don't have anything. But I also struggled with people saying that, oh, it's just marketing on the cheap. And that's not always the best solution either. So really, it is kind of that equilibrium that wonderful, scrappy solutions like the mousetrap deliver, where you are accomplishing your objective, which, oh, by the way, you had to know what your objective was in the first place, instead of just getting on Facebook, doing something on Snapchat.
Yeah. You know, it seems like, Nick, that this is going to work well for small businesses, but the reason that it's going to work, I think it might have even have a bigger impact on bigger companies, because the inertia is so strong in terms of, well, that's what we spent last year. That's what we did last year. I got to protect my budget. I got to protect this big marketing department. And instead, I think there's probably a lot of people in the C-suite that want to say something like, look, let's blow everything up. are we really being smart about stuff?
Exactly. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because I got a little of this into the book, but I think where we're seeing it right now, too, is with the, meteoric rise of Snapchat. And I think so many, it's hard to ignore, and it is something that should be on our radars. We should all be keeping track of it. But I think the C-suite and the people that we're working for and with know enough to be dangerous about it. Because that's why, even in this first quarter, so many clients have been saying, oh, you know, and I work mostly with the marketing leadership, the marketing team. And they're saying, oh, every meeting I go to, they're saying, oh, we should be doing something on Snapchat. And it's because there's this kind of fervor, this buzz that, oh, Snapchat's a big thing. And it is kind of that snowball of, we should be doing that. And I think that's where, a smart framework, the brains before budget thing in the book, you know, really raises that question and makes us do our homework. Why should we be on Snapchat? You know, some businesses, it makes a lot of sense. Like, I mean, I think I cite, what Taco Bell's doing there, what Acura is doing there. That's a very specific launch and millennial focused strategies that fit the platform. But I think that especially as different as Snapchat is, it's that especially is not one of those social logos that we just need to tile along our website with all the other ones.
Yeah, and explain what checklist marketing is. That's let's put a period at the end of this sentence here, and
sure.
and share that concept, because I think the more people that understand that, the better.
Yeah, well, I think with all of this, I mean, and I think, you know, I kind of give a historical perspective in the book, you know, as marketers, you know, there was nothing very much before print. And then for 500 years, media didn't change. I joke, being the new media teacher at the university, that I would have had to have done something else in the early days. It would have had to have been a clumsy blacksmith, because nothing changed. And then, of course, we saw TV and radio come along, but that was still the better part of 100 years. So we went decades without media changing. And now we're in this rapid cycle of change over the past decade, couple of decades, with the rise of the internet. And now we don't even go years. I mean, you look at how fast Snapchat has quickly become, by many counts, the third most used social network in the latest data that I'm looking at. And I think where we fall into a trap as marketers is thinking of this like an arbitrary checklist. Like whatever comes up, whatever's next, we just have to pile it on. We have to check it off the list. Then we all see the boss in the hallway, or go to a client meeting and they've seen something on CNBC, read something in the Harvard Business Review referencing, Snapchat, referencing the newest Instagram or Facebook feature. Why aren't we doing that? And it's easy to say, oh, yeah, yep, better check that off the list. And the fact of the matter is, it's one of those scary moments where we might have to tell a little bit of truth to power and say, you know what, we're keeping an eye on Snapchat, but that doesn't make sense for what we're trying to accomplish with our marketing right now. But you can only do that if you've put your brains before your budget and you have a plan for what it is you're trying to do, instead of just, collecting icons.
Right. Well, speaking of plans, you say in the book that rather than saying you're working on your strategy, why is it better to say you're mapping out a new direction for marketing?
Well, that's one area where I probably did pick on big businesses a little bit, because I think sometimes we're unwilling to focus on strategy. Because even as I say, focus on strategy, you might hear even have the listeners pulling back a bit. And usually when you're standing next to someone, they'll kind of start to slowly back towards the exit of the room, because nobody wants to spend a few months in internal navel-gazing exercises that encumber most of the staff, that result in a great big tabbed binder that sits up on the shelf next to the crisis plan and doesn't really do anything. So I like the metaphor, and when we work with clients, we do, our biggest, strategic solution that we offer, we call a map. And that's because I like the map metaphor, because it is about getting somewhere. It is about dropping a pin on the other side and say, we're trying to get over there. Mm-hmm. And then if you align that over there with a business objective, we are trying to, build a community online. We're trying to generate leads. We're trying to drive sales. We're trying to move public opinion, public relations there. So if you have some sort of pin dropped in your map, then you can more clearly develop a strategy for what makes the most sense to get you there, which kind of brings us back to something like Snapchat. If you say, you know what, we are in the business of driving leads and sales, and right now, with the features that are available on Snapchat, that's not the best way to do that. So we're going to keep an eye on that. That doesn't make sense for what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about maps. Can you say a little bit more about how to create a digital marketing compass to tie the two together?
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of the next step. If you think about the famous, speaking of books, Simon Sinek, Start With Why. I talk about Rudyard Kipling's poem, I Keep Six Honest Serving Men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. So I use those as kind of the compass points of starting with the why, being that business objective, that pin that you drop in the map that you're driving towards. And then from there, we can use what I think of as a digital compass. And from there, if you know what your objective is and who it is you're trying to reach, you have a better idea of knowing what works best when. And I kind of go channel by channel in the early parts of the book through some of the more popular networks, content tools, and give some digital compass examples that illustrate that idea in action.
Mm-hmm. This is so helpful for marketing people because it pulls them closer to the revenues or whatever the corporate objectives are. And I think it arms them for when the Snapchat or fill in the blank, the shiny new object discussion comes up. Because it seems like there's still so much, there's such a legacy of marketing being the make it pretty department. Just go in circles and, do arts and crafts party planning. And this type of thing, I would think, would make somebody who's like in the C-suite think, wow, these guys are actually thinking like business owners now.
Well, yeah. And it is one of those scary things, like that kind of Snapchat, just say no. And not that no is always the right answer, but the ability to say that and to pivot, because you can't just say, nope, we're not going to do it, because that's someone that isn't open-minded, that isn't focused on what's next, and has that answer grounded in their own fears about not understanding the network or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you can tie it back to a plan based on the business objectives and have the ability to say, we've looked at that and that doesn't make sense for us right now, and you can back it up strategically, then absolutely. I think that, beyond just being a smart marketer, I think you better position yourself as a leader in the organization too.
Yeah, and you can say things like, well, when the board or the owners indicated that these were the priorities, blah, 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 it shows that you're on top of these things. And it's so helpful for, I think, marketing folks who, they want direction and they are probably fighting more fires related to the shiny new object syndrome than they would prefer. So let's move on and explain what a question engine is. probably my favorite part of the book.
Awesome. Well, this is found in part two of the book after all of the Get Smart stuff. I talk about how you can do more with less. Because one of the biggest challenges with social media and content marketing is the fact that beyond all of the other ways that marketing's changing, we're also moving away from kind of this set it and forget it mindset. That, you know, we put together the perfect 30-second spot, we put together the direct mail package, and then we, you know, launch it. We send out the direct mail piece, we broadcast, you know, we buy media, and we sit back after that. But with social media and content, it is a daily regimen that we are all of a sudden thrust into. And I make the point in the chapter about building a question engine is the fact that questions are kind of magical. And we want to build an engaging community online on social media. And oftentimes we feel like nobody's talking back. Like we say things and we're not really engaging with anybody. And so my answer there in the book is to create a question engine, to ask as many questions as you can to keep conversations moving online. And the other kind of side of that on the content side of the house is that if you consider the questions that your audience has about what they're struggling with, especially where they are easily found in B2B organizations, where you know a lot about who your buyer is and what they struggle with, that you can then, instead of just kind of blindly creating content, you could create content that answers those questions as well. So hopefully, by creating a question engine, you can both power your social media and content marketing efforts.
Mm-hmm. And let's go on and explain why email is the Rodney Dangerfield of marketing.
It gets no respect. I picked up the
maybe
joke
we should there. Explain for the younger listeners who Rodney Dangerfield is.
Yeah, I think, you know, actually teaching college kids, I think they still watch Caddyshack. So you could probably...
Okay. Or Back to School.
That might be a way in. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
How timely is this? There was just another study out this past week that's not in the book, but would fall right in line with data that I cite in there. And actually, you talk about efficient and effective. The study that was out just this past week, I would have loved to have put in the book because it talked about what are the most effective digital tactics. And then they also asked, what is most difficult to use? This was some data from Ascend 2. Email was the clear winner in terms of efficacy. 61% said that email marketing was the most effective. And then on the other side of that, they said, what's most difficult to use? And email wasn't the easiest, but it was the second easiest. So here you've got something that isn't hard compared to social media, where I think 54% said that social media, for the reason that we were talking about, that you're creating it day in, day out, is harder. You've got something that's easy to use, email marketing, that's effective as ever, but because it is one of the least shiny new things, it's probably one of the earliest forms of online marketing in that kind of timeline that we walked through, we ignore it. We have set it and forgotten it, and it still delivers enormous value. But more importantly, in the context in which I bring it up in the book, talking about how you can connect your digital dots, making your email a part of your social and content strategy can also help you do more with less as well.
Mm-hmm. Email marketing is like that mousetrap you're talking about. It's been around for a while and it still works.
I know. And you know, it's like there's fewer mashable articles about mousetraps. So I think that they don't have the same problem that email does. The other stuff is covered constantly.
Yeah.
I mean, just looking at all of the stuff, I mean, like, you know, go Google, do a Google News search in Snapchat of Snapchat, and you're going to see all kinds of articles daily. You know, people are eating this stuff up. The media and tech media are creating tons of stories around this. And you look, and I cite several different sources on email still being not just alive, but doing very, very well for businesses. So that's, I mean, I think it's back to that big idea of the dangers of the checklist, that it could seem, you know, blindly, okay, we need to be doing all of the newest stuff.
Yes, yes.
And if we can forget about anything, if we can backburner anything, if we can autopilot anything, it's email. Or worse, we take budget away from email. And I think the biggest mandate on all of us, as study after study comes out, and I try to kind of force them out of the file drawer, that old psychology phenomenon that we as a society kind of backburner things that don't reinforce what we want to think and believe, which I think we want to believe in social media. And I do think social media is incredibly valuable, but sometimes at the expense of these old dead things like email, and that's just not the case. So beyond getting it out of the file drawer, I think we as marketers have to ask ourselves, when was the last time we actually dusted off our email strategy and made sure it connected with our other digital channels as well?
Yeah, probably the last time they dusted off their crisis PR strategy.
Exactly. All of that stuff's up on the shelf.
Hey, let's just talk briefly about ROI. Why are marketers so reluctant to roll up their sleeves and dig in when it comes to measurement?
It's hard. And you talk about, I mean, that's the easiest one. I mean, here's the senior marketing majors that I teach in my social media marketing class. On the first day, we always go around and I have them introduce themselves, say where they're from. And then I say, because again, 99% of them are senior marketing majors, I say, why marketing? And an overwhelming majority say they're business majors and they had to choose an area of focus and they don't like math. And they don't like math.
Ooh.
And they don't like math. And I'm like, I just, you know, you don't want to kind of shake your head and you know, shake them by the shoulders on the first day of class. But I'm like, you are in for a rude awakening.
At least in terms of their entire career, too. Are they getting, I'm just curious, are they getting Bachelor of Arts or Bachelor of Science in marketing?
It would be a a BA. It would be a BA.
Because I think I'd heard that more marketing degrees are by nature becoming Bachelor of Science because there is so much more math now.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I think it also, you know, I kind of go back to the and give a brief history of marketing measurement and kind of the advent of direct and with catalog direct mail business. And we loved measurement for a while. And then with the birth of the TV industrial complex, it became very important for us, for marketing, for those industries, for measurement to be imperfect, to be based on Nielsen samples and, you know, oh, we kind of don't know. We know how many people tuned in and then we can kind of sort of get there. But I think it's kind of a renaissance in measurement because we do have so many more relevant numbers and many more irrelevant numbers. And that's, we've kind of gone from having not enough numbers in the TV and radio days or not enough accurate numbers based on sample data and all of that to all kinds of data. And it's kind of back to that, you know, the old saying that everything that counts doesn't necessarily count, or everything that can be counted doesn't necessarily count. Everything that counts can't necessarily be counted. So you have to figure out what metrics matter. And that's why, you know, those two concepts kind of bookend the book of the importance of having a strategy. And back to that map concept, if I have that pin dropped, I know very clearly where it was I was trying to get to. And at the end, when it's time to measure, I know if I've gotten there or if I'm off course as well.
Mm-hmm.
So with
you, about in the beginning about how marketing strategy is connected to measuring success.
Absolutely. And so many of us want to skip. I mean, you say, you know, why is measurement so hard? And I think both of those pieces, we don't like strategy because I think we kind of tell ourselves this story that we got to move so fast.
I need it now.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much we can't get held up for a couple of months. And that's why I think if you focus on a scrappy strategy that is focused on a business objective and lays out, you know, some answers to the who, what, when, where, why, then you've got more done than you realize. And more importantly, you have something that you can measure at the end and say, oh, you know what, we got there, or we almost got there, or we got, you know, further along than we thought on the journey as well.
Yeah. Well, one of the lines in the at the towards the end where you talk about the real point of measurement that I loved was you said the single most important thing after identifying a key performance indicator is knowing what you plan on doing with the data you've gathered.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the other kind of murkiness around measurement is that there is just because you can measure something doesn't necessarily mean that you need to. I mean, some of these vanity metrics today, I cite Jason Falls, who says, you know, you can't pay the rent with impressions. So you have to get past some of these things that are neat numbers. I mean, we could do all sorts of bad things with numbers, charts, graphs in the name of, look, I measured something and it has a graph going up and to the right.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I know. Neat. Let's have a party.
Yeah.
Is anything different? Yeah.
No. But I just think that if marketing folks, when they're having these discussions with the, I don't know, if they're not in charge, they could just say, you know, can you just give me one business objective? just give me a point on the map. We'll figure out how to get there. But so many, I don't know, so many, but a lot of companies I'll talk to, and they'll, you know, these poor marketing folks are like, we're just kind of, you know, waiting to, we don't quite know what the goals and objectives are. And, that's too bad. And I think that, in the future, marketing people are going to be, more inclined to say, well, I've got to have that to start, boss. I just need to know that. So.
I think we're gonna have to, because I also think there's kind of all of this fervor that's been shaken up over the past few years, and I think it's gonna kind of settle back into, okay, so really, how do we keep building and growing the business? All of that craziness was fun, but we're still in the business that we're in.
Yeah. Well, you know, for many marketers, this is a terrifying era. Why do you maintain that there's never been a better time to be in marketing?
You know, I think it's because of the fact that all of the, you know, not to sound like Mr. Digital, but all of the cool things that we have the ability to do, you know, I don't want to sound like a TV radio hater, but, you know, the generation, the better part of the century that we spent, even before that, interrupting people, we can now create content that people want to find, that they want to uncover. And we can create things that they want to see, hopefully annoy them less. And more importantly, I think connect the right people with the right businesses, with the right brands that helps businesses grow, which help communities grow, which I think ultimately makes the world a better place, mm-hmm. all by doing some marketing a little bit more smart and scrappy than we were before.
Yeah. And, you know, the advertising's never going to go away. And newspaper, TV, radio, they're not going to go away, and they have their place. It's just there's so many more things that are more effective, more cost effective, and your prospective customers like them better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But that old playbook, I think, is still, you know, very much there. In other words, you know, like bloodletting was an accepted medical practice for many years, and it took a long time before people realized it's not actually the best way to go. And I still think we're sort of that way as it relates to some of the traditional marketing, but we're going to get there. And anyone who's been in one of your classes is going to get there faster. So Well, Nick, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
It would be back to checklist marketing. You don't have to do everything. And I think that it's scary to not. But you're going to burn yourself out. And more importantly, if you think about that map, it's going to take you longer to get to that destination if you make it there at all, if you try to do everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What books have inspired your work and career?
I am a huge, unabashed Jay Baer fan.
And, but you know, I should interrupt. He's a fan of yours, too, because when I interviewed him for his last book, which is
Hug Your Haters.
Hug Your Haters. Sorry, Jay. Don't hate me. He recommended.
If he did, it wouldn't matter because of the book, but go on.
Hug Your Haters. Well, no, he's written a number of books, but he talked about you. So there's a mutual thing going on.
Yeah. I mean, I love Jay's books. I just finished Hug Your Haters. Loved it. We're giving that out at a social brand forum this year for everyone that attends. But another one that I always try to sneak in there too, especially when you talk about influencing my writing, is Daniel Pink. Mm. And not specifically, obviously, marketing, though To Sell as Human, I think, is beneficial for anyone that sells anything, which is most of us. But I think that especially writing about something that could be technical, whether that is brain science, like he spends most of his time on, or marketing, sales, and media, I think he does a great job of interjecting personality into it. Mm-hmm. And I think that both of those guys and others too, Dory Clark is another favorite, Heidi Grant Halverson. I think that too often if you read a lot of marketing books, you encounter many that are written up to a certain level. And I think when you can keep it concise and simple, those are the ones that I looked at, not just in terms of what they were saying, but like looked at the size of the book, looked at how they were divided up, how long each chapter was. And I know that stuff sounds kind of boring and technical, but I think that is...
Well, that's you're allowed to talk about that. You're allowed to talk about that on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Awesome.
Remember I said this was a book addict's
safe
space?
It's a safe space.
Yes.
Yeah. So then I can tell you that there were about four books, including Jay. Actually, those ones that I mentioned, it was Jay's Utility, because Hug Your Haters wasn't out yet. Dory Clark's Standout, Heidi Grant Halverson's No One Understands You and What to Do About It, mm-hmm. and Daniel Pink's To Sell as Human. And I laid them all out, did a page count. The authors that I knew, actually, I guess all of them, I was able to get a word count on. And then I looked at chapters and parts, and I thought, first of all, it's amazing how those books that I just named are all similar in size and overall structure. And then I thought, I want to make something that is of that shape, and that's about exactly where I ended up.
Interesting. Yeah, I got to see Daniel Pink at the Inbound Conference last year speak, and I've been trying to get him on the show. So if there are any listeners out there that can put in a good word for me, please do so. Are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or are looking forward to reading? I know you mentioned Jay's Hug Your Haters.
I encountered at South by Southwest a couple of weeks ago, Gary Vaynerchuk, and was lucky enough to get a copy of his new book, Ask Gary V. And speaking of question engines,
mm-hmm.
and simple, scrappy content creation and recreation, I am fascinated by this book and what it's all about, especially for a book nerd. I mean, there's people that are you know, Gary V fanboys that are going to read anything he does. I like him, but I'm most fascinated because it's based on his video series, which is question driven.
Yeah.
But then he's taken, because I talk about simple content creation hacks, and this is like the most massive content hack that I have seen, because you've got all of these little fragmented videos on topics answering questions that he has then created a book out of. So I'm excited to be a book nerd about that one.
Yeah, you know, the content engineering behind that book is fascinating.
Well, and the foresight, too. I mean, we talked about Jay. He did a video review of that book.
I saw that. Yeah, that was great.
And, And that's one of the things that he said too, was it's like, you see someone do something really smart like that, and it just makes you, I mean, you're kind of in awe of it. And then the other part is you're like, why didn't I think of that? That's so cool. So,
yeah. Oh, that's great.
So that's what I'm really excited about.
Well, Nick, how best can listeners learn more about you and your book?
The best place for the book is getscrappybook.com. And me, I'm at nickwestergaard.com. Two A's in Westergaard.
Okay. And also, we want to have hashtag getscrappy as people are reading it or even listening to this. Just
absolutely.
At minimum, use that hashtag, and Nick's going to hear about it, and I am too.
Share your scrappy story with us.
Yes. So the name of the book is Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. The author is Nick Westergaard. Nick, happy birthday, and thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you, and happy birthday to you while we're at Social Brand Forum.
There you go. And that closes the book on episode 69 of the Marketing Book Podcast. But please don't let the end of this episode be the end of what you can learn about modern marketing. Visit marketingbookpodcast.com for show notes, free resources, and marketing guides. And while there, make sure to sign up for the Marketing Book Podcast newsletter so you never miss an episode. You know what I love? I love to hear from listeners like you. I really do. Is there a book you recommend for the show? I'd like to hear about it. Is there something I'm mispronouncing? Is it data or data? Is it agile or agile? Just go to marketingbookpodcast.com and leave me a message or connect with me on LinkedIn. My name again is Douglas Burdett. Or heck, just tweet me up using hashtag marketingbook. And please join us next time as we talk with Tema Frank about her new book, People Shock, The Path to Profits When Customers Rule. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.